told you not to talk to it. You did.
I survived.
So far.
There's more.
Always.
I couldn't stop staring. I knew who he was. And now that I knew, I couldn't believe I hadn't seen it before.
Never let you, small thing.
Let me now.
Why?
Curiosity.
Dead cats.
9 lives. I countered. He smiled and his head swiveled in a distinctly unseely manner. I was also seeing superimposed on a space of air that couldn't exist, at least not in this realm, an enormous darkness regarding me. Its head didn't swivel. It grated like stone on stone. It was as if the king was so vast that no single realm could contain him. Around him, dimensions splintered, overlapped, shifted. His eyes locked with mine, opening wider and wider until they swallowed the entire abbey, and I went spinning head over heels into them, with the abbey tumbling beside me. I was wrapped in enormous black velvet wings, taken into the heart of darkness that was the Unseelie King. He was so far beyond my comprehension that I couldn't begin to absorb it. Ancient didn't come close, because he was newborn in each moment as well. Time didn't define him. He defined time. He wasn't death or life or creation or destruction. He was all possibles and none, everything and nothing, a bottomless abyss that would look back at you if you gazed into it. He was a truth of existence. Once you'd been exposed to him, you'd never be the same. Like a contagion that infected the blood and brain, he forced new neural pathways to develop merely to handle the brief contact. That or you went nuts. For a split second, drifting in his vast, ancient embrace, I understood everything. It all made sense. The universes, the galaxies. Existence was unfolding precisely as it should. And there was a symmetry, a pattern, a stunning beauty to the structure of it. I was tiny and naked, lost in black velvet wings so lush, rich, and sensual that I never wanted to leave. His darkness wasn't frightening. It was verdant, teeming with life on the verge of becoming. There were shiny pearls of worlds tucked into his feathers. I rolled between them, laughing with delight. I think he rolled with me, watching my reaction to him, learning me, tasting. I tumbled among planets, constellations, stars. They hung from his quills, suspended, trembling with growing pains, waiting for the day he would unfasten them, bat them off into the ballpark and see what they might do. A home run! Hey, batter, batter! Fly ball, watch out! That ball sucks, didn't stitch it tight enough, coming apart at the seams. I saw us through his eyes. Dust motes floating in a shaft of sunlight that stabbed through the rusted-out roof of a barn. He was as likely to swipe his hand through us and watch us scatter as he was to turn and walk away from this particular hole-in-the-roof byproduct. Or maybe sneeze us all into the great outdoors, where we would go whirling off in a dozen different directions, lost in lonely oblivion, never to come together again. By our standards, he was mad. Utterly and completely mad. But every now and then, he surfaced and walked a fine line of sanity. It never lasted long. By his standards, we were paper dolls, flat and one-dimensional, barking mad as far as he was concerned. But every now and then, one of us walked a fine line of sanity. It never lasted long. Still, all was well. Life was, and change happened. Me. He thought I was relatively sane. I laughed until I cried, rolling around in his feathers. Because of his imprint inside me? If I was a shining example of my race, we should all be shot. He showed me things, took my hand and escorted me into an enormous theater, where I watched an endless play of light and shadows from a prime seat in the front row. He watched me. Chin on a fist from a red crushed velvet chair in a box near the stage.
Never did get it all out.
His voice came from every speaker, huge, melodic. The book.
Can't eviscerate a sensual self.
Playing doctor again.
Trying. You listening this time?
He's stealing your book. You listening? The dreamy-eyed guy's head swiveled away from the stage, and suddenly the theater was gone, and we were back in the cavern. Wings no longer cradled me. I was cold and alone. I missed his wings. I yearned for him. It hurt.
It will pass,
he said absently.
You will forget the pain of separation. They always do.
His eyes narrowed on Verlaine.
Yes. He is.
Aren't you going to stop him?
Que sera, sera.
I was being stalked by a song, haunted by the calliope from hell. It's your responsibility. You should take care of it.
Sure, it is a false god. No fun there.
Some changes are better than others.
Expound.
If you stop him, the changes will be much more interesting.
Opinion subjective.
So is yours, I said indignantly. His starry eyes glinted with amusement.
If he replaces me, I will become something else.
I could almost hear the Shisadu saying,
Is not any act of destruction, should time enough pass, an act of creation?
The apple didn't fall far from the tree. I don't want you replaced. I like you as you are.
Flirting with me, beautiful girl?
I tried to breathe and couldn't. The Unseelie King was touching me, kissing me. I could feel his lips on my skin and I...
Breathe, BG.
I could breathe again. Please stop him. I wasn't above begging. I'd get on my knees. If Verlaine succeeded in gaining ultimate power, I didn't want to live in this world. Not with him in charge. With a spell of unmaking, he could kill barons, and he'd made it clear every chance he got that he wanted to. He had to be stopped. I wasn't losing any of my people. My parents were going to live to a ripe old age. Barons was going to live forever. Me? Well, I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do, but I planned on having a long, full lifetime. It would mean a lot to me.
You would owe me, like you owe my Grey Woman.
Was there anything he didn't know? Deals with devils, Barons would have said, if he hadn't been frozen. Deal. He winked.
I'd planned to anyway.
Oh, then why did you...
Pretty girl and all. Asking. Gotta love that. Stuff of heroes. Don't get the role often.
He was gone. He reappeared near the slab, staring at Verlaine through crystal walls. I was horrified to realize Verlaine was more than halfway through the Shisadu. But it was going to be okay. The king was going to stop him, crush him like a bug. Verlaine would take one look at who'd come after him and sift out with his tail tucked, whimpering with fear. The king would reseal the cavern and all would be well. No one would have any spells of unmaking. Barons would continue to be unkillable. That was a constant, eternal rock beneath my feet that I needed. Four. Where on earth do you think he came from? My mother finished her sentence. She frowned. And where did he go? Time resumed, and everyone in the cavern began moving again. Verlaine's head dropped down and his eyes slid open. His reaction wasn't at all what I expected. His mouth ticked up in a cool smile.
About fucking time you showed your face, old man. Ah,
said the Unseelie King.
Cruz.
Cruz? Verlaine was Cruz? I glanced around the cavern. Everyone looked as stupefied as I felt, staring between Verlaine and the dreamy-eyed guy. When I'd stood at Darok's side, watching the Seelie and Unseelie armies face off in a snowy Dublin street, I'd been awed by the mythic proportions of the event. Now, according to the dreamy-eyed guy who was really the Unseelie King, the Seelie who'd been masquerading as Verlaine for hundreds of thousands of years was really the legendary Cruz, a.k.a. War, the final and most perfect Unseelie ever sung into existence. And he was facing off with his maker. Cruz was staring down the Unseelie King. It was the stuff of million-year-old legends. I looked from one to the other. You could have heard a pin drop in the cavern. I glanced at Barons, who had both brows raised in an expression of complete shock. For a change, there was something he hadn't known either. Then his eyes narrowed on the dreamy-eyed guy.
He's the king. That frail old geezer.
Geezer? You mean the pretty French woman? Joe said. She's a waitress at Chester's.
French woman? It's the Morgan Freeman look-alike from the bar on the 7th level at Chester's.
Christian said.
No.
Dagus said.
"'Tis the ex-groundskeeper from Edinburgh Castle, who took on a bussing job at Riordan's pub when the walls fell.
And I saw a young, dreamy-eyed college guy. He winked at me again. We all saw something different when we looked at him. I stared back at Verlaine, Cruz. How had I not known? How had I been so completely duped? It had never been a Seely Prince facing an unSeely Prince that night in the snowy Dublin street, but two unSeely Princes. If War's brother had recognized him, he'd never given it away. Verlaine was Cruz. Verlaine was War. I'd walked hand in hand with him on a beach. I'd kissed him more times than I could count. I had his name in my tongue. I'd trembled with orgasm after orgasm in his arms. He'd given me Ashford back. Had he taken it to begin with? War. Of course. He'd turned my world on itself. He'd set armies against each other and sat back watching the chaos he'd created. He'd even gotten out in it and fought with us, no doubt laughing inside, enjoying the added chaos, being in the thick of the fight, watching his handiwork up close and personal. Was he behind it all? Had he been nudging Darok for millennia, priming him to defy the Queen? And when Darok was made mortal, had Cruz whispered in a few unSeely ears, maybe planted key information, and helped him bring down the walls from far behind the scenes? Had he been watching, waiting for the day he might get close enough to the Shisadu to steal the King's knowledge and kill the current Queen and take her magic? Did Fae really possess such patience? He'd killed all the princesses and secreted the queen away to kill at the right time. He'd turned the Seely and unSeely courts against each other, using our world as their battlefield. We were all pawns on his chessboard. I had no doubt he was after the ultimate power. The nerve of him, the arrogance. He was the one who'd told me it could be done, and how. He was the one who'd recounted the legend to begin with. Unable to resist bragging. When I'd asked him about Cruz, he'd gotten irritated, saying,
"One day you will wish to talk of me."
He'd been jealous of himself, angry that he couldn't reveal his true majesty. He'd said,
"Cruz was the most beautiful of all, although the world will never know it. A waste of perfection to never have laid eyes upon one such as he."
How it must have chafed him to have to hide his true face for so long. I'd tanned in a silk chaise, lying next to him. I'd dipped my toes in the surf, holding hands with War. I'd admired an unSeely prince's naked body, wondered what it would be like to have sex with him. I'd conspired with the enemy and never even guessed it. All the while he'd been touching and adjusting things, nudging us this way and that. And it had worked. He'd gotten exactly what he'd wanted. Here he was, standing over the king's book, absorbing the deadly knowledge with the unconscious queen lying at his feet, so he could kill her and take the true magic of their race, too. He'd put her on ice in the unSeely prison to keep her under control, and alive until he was certain he was the most powerful male among them all. The king had given up his dark knowledge. Once Cruz had it, would he really be stronger than the king? I watched the spells scribed in the Shisadu slide off the page, move up his fingers into his hands, arms, shoulders, and vanish beneath his skin. He was almost done. Why wasn't the king stopping him?
Begun. Can't be stopped. Think I'd leave part of the book in two places when they couldn't even guard one,
the king said. Barons and the rest of the men were back to slamming the walls, trying to tear them down to get to Cruz. But it was too late. He had only a few pages left to go. I stood, shivering, looking between the king and Cruz, hoping the king knew what he was doing. Cruz turned the last page. As the final spell vanished, the book collapsed into a thin pile of gold dust and a handful of winking red gemstones on the slab. The Shisadu had finally been destroyed. Too bad it now lived and breathed inside the most powerful Unseelie prince ever created. The transition was seamless. One moment I was in the cavern with everyone else. The next I was standing on a giant grassy swell of a hill with Kruis and the king. An enormous moon obliterated the horizon, welling up from behind the planet. It blocked out the night sky entirely, but for a smattering of stars against a cobalt palette above it. The rounded pasture climbed gently for miles, vanishing into the moon and making it seem like, if I walked to the top of the ridge, I might hop the pineboard fence and bridge planet to moon with a single leap. The air hummed with a low-level charge, and in the distance, thunder rolled. Black megaliths jutted like the fingers of a fallen giant poking into the cool, unblinking eye of the moon. We stood between towering stones, Kruis facing the king, me at midpoint between them. The queen was slumped at Kruis's feet. I backed out and away for a wider view. I wondered who'd brought us here and left all the others behind. Kruis or the king? Why? Wind whipped my hair into a tangle. The breeze was rich with spice and the fragrance of night-blooming jasmine. Hunters glided past the moon, gonging deep in their chests, and the moon answered. I had no idea what world I was on, what galaxy I was in. But some part of me, my inner king, knew this place. We'd chosen the Hill of Terra for the resemblance, but Terra was a pale imitation. On Earth, the moon was never so near as it was here, and there was only one, not three, in the night sky. Power pulsed in this planet's rocky core and mineral veins. Earth's magic had been bored to death by humans long ago. "Why the three of us?" I said.
"Children?"
the king replied. I didn't like what his answer seemed to imply. War was so not my brother.
"Mekayla,"
Kruis said softly. I gave him a cool look. "Did you think it was funny? You lied to me over and over. You used me."
"I wanted you to accept me as I was, but how is it you say? My reputation preceded me. Others filled your head with lies about Kruis. I endeavored to correct them. Open your eyes."
"By telling me more lies? Valaine didn't kill Kruis the day the king and queen fought. You switched places with Valaine."
"With the three amulets the king never believed good enough, I deceived them all. Together, they are strong."
He touched his neck, a smug glint in his eyes, and although I couldn't see them, I knew he wore them still. He'd used them to maintain his flawless glamour of Seelie Prince. I'd seen it flicker only a few times, when he'd been near the Abbey's wards. That day I called you to help me defeat the Guardian in the Abbey, the day you hissed and vanished.
"It was a truth ward made of blood and bone. It sensed me as Unseelie. Had I stayed, I would have been unable to maintain the glamour. But you could not pass it either. Why is that?"
I didn't answer. "The queen killed Valaine with her sword, and never even knew it. You've been impersonating him ever since."
"He was a fool. After I had my audience with the queen, it was Valaine she dispatched to confine me in her bower. I took his face and gave him mine. He was not half the fey I am. He knew nothing of true illusion. Could not have created an amulet capable of such if he'd lived a million years. Then I took him to her to kill. He was pathetic, pleaded his innocence, whimpered at the end, and made a mockery of my name. The other Unseelie princes tried their hand at a curse and blamed that on me as well."
"You hid among the Seelie all this time?"
"Never drinking from the cauldron, watching, waiting for the perfect convergence of events. The book was missing for an eternity. The old fool hid it. 23 years ago, I felt it, and knew the time was right. But enough about me. What are you, Mekayla?"
"You set Darok up."
"I encouraged where encouragement was useful."
"You want to be king," I said. Kruis's iridescent eyes flashed.
"Why would I not? Someone needs to take over. He turned his back on his children. We were an accident of creation he sought to contain and hide. He fears power. I do not. He refuses to lead our people. I will champion them as he never did. And when they weary of your rule,
the king said,
when you realize you can never please them, I will make them happy. They will love me. So all gods think, at first. Shut up, old man! Still, you wear Valaine's face. What do you fear?
The king said.
I fear nothing!
But his gaze lingered on me a long moment.
I fight for my race, Mackayla. I have since I was born. He would conceal us in shame and condemn us to a half-life. Remember that. There are reasons for all I have done.
Abruptly, his golden mane was raven, his gold velvet skin bronzed. Iridescent eyes emptied. A torque threaded with silver slithered around his neck. Beneath his skin, kaleidoscopic tattoos crashed like waves in a turbulent sea. He was beautiful. He was horrifying. He was soul-destroying. A nimbus of gold surrounded his body. And his face. Oh, God, his face. I knew that face. I'd seen that face, bending over me, holding my head in his arms, cradling me, while he moved inside me. You were the fourth at the church, I cried. He'd raped me. With his other dark brethren, he'd turned me into a mindless shell of a person, left me shattered and naked in the street. And I would have remained broken forever except that barons had come charging in after me with men and guns, taken me away and put me back together again. The unseelie prince cocked his head, looking every bit as unnatural as his brother's. Sharp teeth gleamed white against the dark skin of his face.
They would have killed you. They had never had a human woman. Derak underestimated their ardor.
You raped me.
I saved you, Mackayla.
Saving me would have been getting me out of there.
You were already prior when I found you. Your life was ending. I gave you my elixir. Your elixir,
the king said mildly.
To stim your wounds.
You didn't have to have sex with me to do it.
I desired you. You refused me. I wearied of your protests. You wanted me. You thought about it. You were not even there. What difference?
You think that makes it okay?
I do not understand your objections. I did nothing that had not already been done by others. Nothing you had not considered. And I did it better.
What exactly did you give me?
I do not exactly.
He imitated my tone perfectly.
No. I have never given it to a human before.
Was it the queen's elixir?
It was mine,
the king said.
I improved it. You are the past,
Cruz said.
I am the future. It is time for you to be unmade.
He was going to unmake the king? Was it possible?
Kids, pain in the ass. Don't know why I ever made them. Hell on relationships. You have no idea,
Cruz said.
Getting the queen to kill Valaine was not the first illusion I wove and left for you, old fool. Although it was the first you saw. This was.
He bent and grabbed a fistful of the queen's hair, raising her by it. As he did, her blankets fell away. The king went perfectly still. In his eyes I saw the black and white boudoir, void of all but empty memories, the endless barren years, the eternal grieving. I saw loneliness as vast and all-encompassing as his wings. I knew the joy of their union and the despair of their separation. I no longer trusted anyone's face. I sought my she-seer center, reinforced it with the amulet, and demanded to be shown what was true. She was still the concubine, the king's mortal beloved, the one he'd gone insane over, created the she-seer because of, walked away from his entire race for.
As the current queen, her death will grant me the true magic of our race. I saved her to kill in front of you before I unmake you. But this time when you see her dead, it will be no illusion.
When the king said nothing, Cruz said impatiently,
Do you not wish to know how I did it, you stubborn old fuck? No. You never would speak up when it mattered. The day you went to battle the queen, I took the concubine another of your famous elixirs. But this time, it was no potion. It was a cup stolen from the cauldron of forgetting. She stood in your boudoir while I erased all memory of you. When she was a blank slate, I bent her over your bed and fucked her. I hid her from you where I knew you would never look. The Seelie Court. I took Valaine's place and pretended she was a human I'd become enamored of. Over time, as the courtiers drank from the cauldron and forgot, as Seelie princesses rose to power and were deposed, she became one of us. I achieved what your potions never did. Time in fairy, our potions and our way of life made her fae. Is it not ironic? The day came when she was so powerful she became our queen. She was always there, alive, but you never even looked. I kept her in the one place I knew the arrogant, unseelie king would not go, bedding down with your grudges while I bedded your bitch. Your concubine became my lover, my queen, and now her death will make me you.
The king's eyes were sad.
In more ways than you know, if it were true. But another stands in your way.
He glanced at me. My eyes widened and I shook my head instantly. What are you trying to do? Get him to kill me? I'm not in his way.
Our magic prefers a woman. I believe it would choose you. I have the Shisadu,
Cruz said.
She does not.
The king laughed.
You think to become me? She becomes her. Not the only possible.
I was horrified. I thought I understood what he was saying and didn't like it one bit.
Perhaps Barons becomes Cruz. Who then would cry judgment?
The king said. Barons wouldn't become war, I said instantly.
Or me. Depends on the nuances.
The king looked at the concubine in Cruz's grasp.
Irrelevant, all of it. I'm not done yet.
She was gone.
What the?
Cruz's hands were suddenly empty. He lunged forward and slammed into an invisible barrier. His eyes narrowed, and he began to chant in a voice that made my blood ice, chiming like the full-blooded, unseelie prince he was. The king waved a hand, and Cruz stopped chiming. Cruz sketched a complicated symbol in the air, eyes narrowed on the king. Nothing happened. He began to chime again. The king silenced him. Cruz conjured a rune and flung it at the king. It hit the invisible barrier and dropped. He flung a dozen more. They all did the same. It was like watching a man and a woman fight, where the man was simply trying to keep the woman from hurting herself too much. Cruz rocked back on his heels, and his wings began to open, black velvet and enormous, framing a nude, muscled body of such perfection that my cheeks were suddenly wet. Long black hair streamed down his shoulders. Brilliant colors rushed beneath his bronze skin. I touched my face and my fingers came away bloody. I was awed by the dark majesty of him. I knew why war was as often revered as feared. I knew what it felt like to be cradled in those wings while he moved inside me. The unseelie king watched him, paternal pride glittering in his eyes. Cruz was trying to destroy him, and he was proud of him. Like a parent watching his child kick off the training wheels and take off down the drive for the first time without help. And I knew that Cruz had never stood a chance, so long as the king cared to exist. The danger would never be whether the king was powerful enough. He was, and always would be, the strongest of them all. The true danger would always only be whether he cared enough. He saw existence completely differently from everyone else. What we might view as defeat and destruction, he saw, like the book he'd created, far down the arrows of time, as an act of creation. Who knew? Maybe it was. But I liked existing here and now, and I'd fight for it. I didn't have a bird's eye view and didn't want it. I liked padding around on dog paws, kicking up fall leaves and digging in spring dew, sniffing up scents on the ground and living a life. I was only too happy to leave the flying for those with wings. I reached for my spear. It was in my holster, and I realized it always had been whenever Valaine was around. It was part of the complex illusion he'd maintained. As an Unseelie, he'd never been able to touch it, yet could have been killed by it. So whenever we were together, he'd fed me the glamour that it was no longer in my holster. Just as the Unseelie princes had fed me an illusion that I'd been turning it on myself there in the church. I never had. I'd chosen to throw it away because I'd believed the glamour. I could have killed them that night if I'd been able to see through it. The power had always been right here, inside me, if I'd just known it. I would kill him now.
Don't even think about it,
the Unseelie king said. He took your concubine. He faked her death. He raped me.
No harm, no foul.
Are you kidding me? He looked at his concubine.
Today amuses.
Abruptly, the moon and megaliths were gone. We were back in the cavern. Cruz chimed, his wings open to their full, majestic glory, eyes blazing with righteous fury, lips peeled back in a snarl. The king iced him like that. A nude, avenging angel encased in clear crystal. Blue-black bars shot up from the floor, framing his prison. I should have told the king to put clothes on him. Make the ice cloudy so no one could see him. Hide those stunning velvety wings. Tone down the golden halo around him. Make him look less angelic, sexual, erotic. But you know what they say about hindsight. The king said to Cat,
He is your Shisidu now.
No! Cat exclaimed. We don't want him.
Your fault it got out. Contain it better this time.
I heard Baron say,
McCabe, what the fuck are you doing here?
People began to appear in the cavern, sifting in. The white-suited McCabe from Casablanca was joined by the leprechaun-like reservations clerk from my first night at the Clarin House, and by the news vendor from the street who'd given me directions to the Garda, the one who'd called me a harried jackass. Liz? Joe said. Where did you come from? Liz said nothing, simply moved as they all did to join the Unseelie King. He's too big for one body, I said numbly. I knew there was something wrong with her, Joe exclaimed. The king had been watching the she-seers and barons. He'd posed as one of the players hunting his own book. He'd been watching me all this time. Since the day I'd come to Dublin, he'd checked me into the Clarin House.
Before that, beautiful girl.
The king slanted me a look that horrified me. Pride glittered in his starry eyes. My high school gym coach joined him. When my grade school principal appeared, I locked my jaw and gave the king a mutinous glare. Since the beginning. Little help might have been nice. The king cradled the concubine tenderly to his chest.
What would you change?
You must give her to us, Drelia demanded. We need her. Without a Valaine, who will lead us?
Find a new queen. She is mine.
Velvet bristled.
But there is no one.
Grow a pair, Velvet.
The king snapped. We don't want Cruz. You take him, Cat was insisting.
What the bloody hell is going on? You can't take the queen. We work for her,
Drustin was saying.
What about the compact?
Kian said.
We need to renegotiate it.
Change me back,
Christian demanded.
I ate only one bite. That's not enough to do this to me. Why am I being punished?
The king only had eyes for the woman in his arms.
You can't leave until you put the bloody walls back up.
Dagus was growling.
We've no idea how to go about.
You'll figure it out.
Skins began to drop to the floor, empty shells of the king's parts. For a moment, I was worried my own might fall off, but it didn't. Barons had pulled me back from being prior. I had no doubt the king would find his concubine, too. wherever she was, in whatever cave of amnesia she was trapped. He would join her, tell her stories, make love to her, until one day they both got up and walked out of it. The dreamy-eyed guy began to change, absorbing the shadows that passed from the skins. He stretched and expanded until he towered over us like the she-seduced beast, but without the malevolence. And when his wings spread wide, eclipsing the chamber in night, stars and worlds dangling from his quills, I felt his joy. The thought that she'd left him by choice had driven him mad. But she hadn't. She'd been taken. He'd loved her for all time. Before she was made. After he'd believed she was gone. Sunshine to his ice. Frost to her fever. I wished them forever.
You too, beautiful girl.
The Unseelie King was gone. Part 5. When my faith is getting weak, and I feel like giving in, you breathe into me again. Skillet, awake and alive. 53. The sign was heavy, but I was determined. Although Baron's strength would have made things a lot easier, I managed without him. I wasn't in the mood for an argument. As I unscrewed the last bracket suspending the gaily painted sign from the brass pole bolted into the brick above the door of the bookstore, it slipped from my hands, fell to the sidewalk, and cracked down the middle. Michaela's manuscripts and miscellany bit the dust before a single customer ever looked up and saw the sign. I was okay with that. It didn't have the right ring to it. Although I'd love seeing my name up there, I'd never have gotten comfortable with it. This place was, well, M&M just didn't roll off the tongue. I had no intention of giving him back the bookstore. I was keeping it forever, and I planned to keep the name, too. I'd never be able to think of it as anything else. 20 minutes later, the original sign was restored. I dusted off my hands, propped the ladder against a column, and stepped back to view my work. The four-story... I looked up. It was 5 stories tonight. The 5-story building was officially Baron's Books and Baubles again, owned by one Michaela Lane. He'd given me the deed last night. I walked out into the middle of the street and assessed my bookstore with a critical eye. It was mine to take care of, and I wasn't yielding 1 inch of it to vandals or the elements. It had weathered the storm of Unseelie better than most places in the city, protected by wards, and a man who could never die. I remembered the first time I'd seen it. I'd come barreling out of the dark zone, terrified, alone, desperate for answers. It had blazed with the holy light of salvation for me that night. My sanctuary. My home. The updated facade of dark cherry and brass gleamed. The alcoved entrance between stately pillars sported a new light fixture that cast a warm amber glow on the handsome cherry door and stained-glass sidelights. The tall windows on the sides of the building, framed by matching columns and delicate wrought-iron latticework, didn't have a single crack, and there were no chips on the pillars. The foundation was solid, strong. Powerful spotlights mounted on the rooftop, controlled by timers, would be coming on any minute now. The lighted sign in the old-fashioned green-tinted windows winked open. The dark zone might be empty, but this place would always stand as a bastion of light as long as it was mine. I'd needed it. It had saved me. I loved this place. And the man. And there was the rub. It had been days since the showdown beneath the abbey, and we still hadn't talked about it. After the king left, we'd all just kind of looked at each other and headed for the door, as if we couldn't get back to where we felt safe and comfortable fast enough. Mom and Dad took one look at Baron's and me and decided to go back to Chester's. I've got the smartest, coolest parents. Baron's and I went back to the bookstore, straight to bed. We'd gotten out only when near starvation had forced us. The finale hadn't been perfect and certainly not what I'd expected last fall, when we were making our desperate plans to keep the walls up between the realms of Fae and Man. The Shisadu had been destroyed. But in the way of Fae things, another had come into being. The she-seers were furious that they'd been left in charge of the new one, but it's hard to argue with an absentee king. Cat had stepped up to the plate, taking over for Rowena, agreeing to lead until the abbey was cleared of shades and their numbers were partially restored, at which time they would revert to a democratic vote and rebuild the haven. I intended to snag a spot in that inner sanctum, where I would lobby for significant changes. First and foremost, that we permanently and irrevocably seal the cavern where the Shisadu was currently frozen in its much too exquisite temptation. Line it with iron, pump it full of concrete. The Keltar had returned to Scotland, taking Christian with them, but none of us believed we'd seen the last of them. Before Halloween, we'd all thought life might one day get back to normal. Those days were gone forever. We'd lost nearly half the world's population, more than 3 billion people dead. The walls were down, and I was pretty sure they'd stay that way, with no queen and no one to lead the Seelie. I had no doubt the king was on extended sabbatical. Jane and his men were out in force, kicking ass, hell-bent on emptying the streets of Unseelie and the skies of Hunters. I planned to talk to him about that. I wondered if we might be able to negotiate a treaty with the Hunters. I didn't like the thought of Kavruk being shot at. Cat had connected with Posthaste Inc.'s international branches. She told me that dark zones abounded around the world, but Danny's Shadebuster recipe had been translated into virtually every language and manufacturing McHalos was a booming business. In certain parts of the world, you could trade one for a cow. There were millions of surplus houses, cars, electronics, all the things I used to dream about one day owning, lying around out there for the taking. And all I could think was that I might cheerfully give up Baron's 911 Porsche Turbo for a glass of fresh-squeezed orange juice. IFPs were drifting around like small tornadoes, but Riordan and his men knew a way to tether them and had begun weeding the worst out of the city. Not because he cared, Riordan had informed me coolly, but because they weren't good for business. Chester's was rocking like never before. Today, when I was out running errands, some chick had actually chirped, "See you in fairy," as if she was saying, "Dude, have a good day." Oh, it was a strange new world. The war was on, but it was a subdued war. Seelie and Unseelie were fighting each other, but keeping it quiet for now, as if they weren't sure what we might do if they messed up any more of our world, and they weren't ready to find out. Yet. The only good fae is a dead fae in my book. P.S. Hunters aren't fae. The power was still down in most places. Generators were hot commodities. The cell towers didn't work. Baron's and his men's phones the mysterious exceptions. The internet had crashed months ago. Some people were talking about maybe not restoring things to the way they were, going in a new direction that was a little less plugged in. I imagined there'd be a lot of different schools of thought, with enclaves springing up here and there, each espousing their own philosophy and social order. I had no idea where the future was headed. But I was glad to be alive, and couldn't think of anywhere I'd rather be than here and now, watching it all unfold. I felt like Baron's. I'd never get enough of living. Only yesterday, Riordan's men had finally located Telly, and I'd gotten to speak with her briefly on Baron's cell phone. She told me Isla O'Connor really was pregnant with me the night the book escaped. I had been born. I did have a biological mother. Telly was on her way here to give me the whole story and would be arriving in a few days. My parents were healthy and happy. The bad guys bit it and the good guys won the day. This time around. It was a wonderful life, with a single painful exception. There was a child behind my bookstore, beneath the garage, and he was in agony every second he lived. And there was a father, who hadn't said a word to me about him or the spell since we'd left the cavern beneath the abbey. I didn't have the faintest idea why. I'd expected him to demand the spell of unmaking the moment we got back to the bookstore. It was what he'd existed for, been hunting for an eternity. But he hadn't. And with each passing day, I grew to dread my inevitable confession more. The lie loomed larger, seemed increasingly impossible to retract. I would never forget the hope in his eyes, the joy in his smile. I'd put it there with a lie. He was never going to forgive me when he found me out.
You can still do it.
I squeezed my eyes shut. That insidious voice had been torturing me ever since we'd left the Abbey. The Shisadu. I couldn't decide if it was a memory of what it had said to me when it tempted me to embrace it, or a reality that was actually inside me. Had the book really downloaded a copy of itself into me while I was still an unformed fetus inside my mother? Had it really created the perfect host for itself 23 years ago, making me a human facsimile of it, waiting for me to mature? Most important of all, was the spell to lay his son to rest really inside me? Could I give it to him? Hear the joy in his laughter again? Free them both? At what cost? I dug my nails into my palms. Last night, right before I drifted off to sleep, I'd heard the child beast howl. Hunger, anguish, eternal misery. We'd both heard it. He kissed me, pretending he hadn't. Then later, when he left to go do whatever it was he did for the child, I'd choked back tears of shame and failure. He'd asked me for one thing, and I hadn't been strong enough to get it for him and survive the getting. I opened my eyes and stared at the bookstore, at the sign swaying gently in the breeze. Dusk brushed the store in shades of violet. A tinge of a metallic silver gauzed the window panes, one of the many new fey hues. Barons would be back soon. I had no idea where he went when he left, but I'd learned the pattern. When he returned, I would be able to feel his heartbeat. I didn't let myself think about doing it. I knew if I thought about it, I never would. I'd chicken out. I let my eyes drift out of focus and took the plunge. The water was frigid, unwelcoming, black as pitch, black as original sin. I couldn't see a thing. I kicked deep. I felt small, young, and afraid. I kicked deeper. The lake was enormous. I had miles and miles of dark, icy water inside me. I was surprised my blood didn't run black and cold.
Melodrama. See, you finally got some.
A familiar voice purred.
How is that flamboyance coming? Universe hates a dull girl.
Where are you?
Keep swimming, Michaela.
Are you really in here?
Always have been.
I kicked harder, pushing deeper into the blackness. I couldn't see a thing. I might as well have been blind. Suddenly there was light.
Because I said let there be.
It said silkily. You're not God, I muttered.
I am not the devil either. I'm you. Are you finally ready to see yourself? What lies at the bottom, the great taproot?
I'm ready. I'd no sooner said it than there it was, shining, resplendent, at the bottom of the lake. Golden rays shot out from it. Rubies shimmered. Locks gleamed. The Shisadu.
I have been here all this time, since before you were born.
I beat you. In the study, I saw through your games twice. I walked away from the temptation.
Can't eviscerate essential self.
I was no longer swimming, but dripping wet and floating to the floor of a black cavern. I drifted to my feet, boots lightly touching down. I looked around, wondering where I was. In the dark night of my soul? The Shisadu was open on a regal black pedestal in front of me, gold pages shimmering. It waited. It was beautiful, so beautiful. Inside me all this time, all those nights I'd been hunting it, it had been right under my nose, or actually behind it. Just like Cruz, I was the Shisadu. But unlike Cruz, I'd never opened it, never welcomed or read it. That was why I'd never understood any of the runes it had given me. I'd never looked inside, only taken what it offered to use it as recommended. If I'd ever dived to the bottom of my glassy lake and opened the book, I'd have had all the king's dark knowledge at my disposal in detail. Every spell and rune, the recipe for every experiment, including how to create the shades, the gray man, even Cruz. It was no wonder the Unseelie King had regarded me with paternal pride. I possessed so many of his memories, so much of his magic. I supposed that was as close to having a daughter as the king would ever get. He'd spat out a part of himself, and it was in me now. Sperm, essential self, what difference to a fae? He could see himself in me, and the fae liked that. It was also no wonder Kavrok had pushed at me mentally and recognized me. He'd found some part of the king inside me, and to him, king was king. He'd missed his traveling companion. Ditto with the Silvers. They'd recognized the essence of the king in me, and while most had resisted me pushing into them and spat me out enthusiastically, thanks to Cruce's botched curse that hadn't been Cruce's at all, the oldest and first Silver that joined the king and concubine's boudoir was unaffected by the curse and had permitted me passage for the same reason. I was wearing Eau de King. Even Adam had sensed something about me, and I knew Cruce must have too. They just hadn't known exactly what. Then there was the time the dreamy-eyed guy had told the feared Dorcha to look deeper, and the pinstriped terror had backed off.
I am open to the spell you want. You need only come close enough to read me, Michaela. It is that easy. We will be rejoined, and you can lay the child to rest.
I suppose you have a perfectly good reason for destroying my sign.
Jericho appeared beside me.
I had to paint the bloody thing myself,
he said pissily.
There's not a sign maker left in this city. I have better things to do than paint.
I gaped. Jericho Barons was standing beside me. Inside my head. I shook it, half expecting him to be knocked off his feet and go rattling around. He remained standing, urbane and implacable as ever. This isn't possible, I told him. You can't be here. This is my head.
You push into mine. I merely projected an image with the push this time to give you something to look at.
He gave me a faint smile.
Wasn't easy getting in. You give a whole new meaning to Rockhead.
I laughed. I couldn't help it. He invaded my thoughts and gave me guff even here.
I found you standing in the street, staring at the sign over the bookstore. Tried talking to you, but you didn't respond. Thought I'd better take a look around. What are you doing, Mac?
He said softly. Barons at his most alert and dangerous. My laughter died and tears sprang to my eyes. He was in my head. I saw little point in hiding anything. He could take a good look around and see the truth for himself. I didn't get the spell. My voice broke. I'd failed him. I hated myself for that. He'd never failed me.
I know.
My gaze flicked to his face, bewildered. You know?
I knew it was a lie the moment you said it.
I searched his eyes. But you looked happy. You smiled. I saw things in your eyes.
I was happy. I knew why you'd lied.
His dark gaze was ancient, inhuman, and uncharacteristically gentle.
Because you love me.
I drew in a ragged breath.
Let's get out of here, Mac. There's nothing for you down here.
The spell. It's here. I can get it. Use it. Lay him to rest.
But you wouldn't be you anymore. You can't take a single spell from that thing. It's all or nothing. We'll find another way.
The Shisadu poisoned the moment.
He lies. He hates you for failing him. Shut it down, Mac. Ice the lake over.
I stared at the book, shining in all its glory. Power, pure and simple. I could create worlds.
Ice his ass over. He's just worried you'll be more powerful than he is.
Barons held out his hand.
Don't leave me, Rainbow Girl.
Rainbow Girl? Was that who I was? It seemed so long ago. I smiled faintly. Remember the skirt I wore to Maluch's the night you told me to dress goth?
It's upstairs in your closet. Never throw it away. It looked like a wet dream on you.
I took his hand. And just like that, we were standing in the street outside Baron's Books and Baubles. Deep inside me, the book whomped closed. As we headed for the entrance, I heard gunshots and we looked up. Two winged dragons sailed past the moon. Jane was shooting at hunters again. Hunters? My eyes widened. Kavrok! Could it be that simple? Oh, God, that's it, I whispered. Barons was holding the door open for me.
What?
Excitement and urgency flooded me. I clutched his arm. Can you get me a hunter to fly?
Of course.
Hurry, then. I think I know what to do about your son. '54. Jericho Barons buried his son in a cemetery on the outskirts of Dublin after 5 days of keeping vigil beside his lifeless body, waiting for it to disappear and be reborn wherever it was they were reborn. His son never disappeared and was never reborn. He was dead, truly dead. I kept a vigil of my own at the door to his study, watching him stare at the beautiful boy through the long days and nights. The answer was so simple once I'd thought of it. It had taken a while to find him flying over the city, but he'd finally soared in beside me, blacker than blackness, with his
"Night, wind, fly high free,"
comments, and his
"Old friend,"
remarks, serene and smooth, chuffing the night air in small frosted puffs. The wind had steamed like dry ice in his wake. I'd asked a favor. It had been the best kind for a hunter. It had amused. It took Barons and 5 of his men to get the beast from beneath the garage up onto the roof of a nearby building, safely restrained. Once they'd been far enough away, they radioed me and I had my new old friend fly in and do what he does best. Death isn't nearly as final as a good kavrucking. When he closed his great black leathery wings around the beast and inhaled long and deep, the beast turned into the boy, and the boy died. As if Kavruk had simply inhaled his life essence. After he'd suffered who knew how many thousands of years, the child was finally at peace. So was Barons. Riordan and his men had sat with Barons through the days and nights, waiting, wondering if it was possible one of them could actually be killed. They'd seemed as offended as they'd been relieved. Castillo had sat in the room and stared unblinking at me for hours. Riordan and the others had to drag him away. I wondered what they'd done to him 1,000 years ago. I knew what grief looked like when I saw it. And when they'd left, although hostility had poured off them in my direction, I knew I'd won a stay of execution. They wouldn't kill me. Not now. I didn't know how long they might feel benevolent toward me, but I'd take what I could get. And if one day they decided it was war between us, it was war they'd get. Somebody'd made me a fighter. With him by my side, there was nothing I couldn't do.
Hey, baby, you up there?
Daddy's baritone soared up from the street. I peeked over the edge of the rooftop and smiled. Mom, Dad, and Inspector Jane were standing down below in front of the bookstore. Daddy was carrying a bottle of wine. Jane had a notebook and a pen, and I knew he was planning to grill me about methods of Fey execution and try once again to get his hands on my spear. I was thrilled my parents had decided to stay in Dublin. They'd taken a house in the city so we could visit. One of these days, I would give Mom most of Alina's stuff back. We would sit and talk, go visit her apartment. I'd take Mom to the college where Alina had been happy for a time. We'd remember her and celebrate what we'd had with her while we had it. Mom was a different woman now, stronger, more alive than ever before. Dad was going to be some kind of Breon, or lawmaker, and work with Jane and his crew to maintain order in New Dublin. He wanted to fight, but Mom wasn't real keen on that idea. She was spearheading a group called NDGU. New Dublin Green Up was devoted to making the city green again, fertilizing the soil, filling the planters, putting down sod, and eventually bringing the parks and commons back to life. It was the perfect job for her. She was the ultimate nester, and Dublin's nest was sorely in need of some feathering. "It's open. Come on up," I called. Mom was carrying two pretty ceramic pots, and I could see the green tips of bulbs sprouting. All my window boxes and planters were still empty. I hadn't had time to get out to the Abbey yet and dig a few things up. I hoped they were a housewarming gift. I turned and checked the table. The drinks were chilled, the plates out, the napkins folded. It was my first garden party. Barron's was looming over a gas grill, searing thick steaks and trying unsuccessfully to hide his disgust. I wasn't sure if he found the act of cooking meat revolting, as opposed to eating it raw, or if he just wasn't much for dead cow because he preferred live cow or live something. I didn't ask. Some things are better left unsaid. He looked at me and I shivered. I never get enough of him. Never will. He lives. I breathe. I want him. Always. Fire to my eyes. Ice to my fever. Later we would go to bed, and when he rose over me, dark and vast and eternal, I'd know joy. Who knew? Much later we might fly a couple of hunters to the moon. While I waited for our dinner company to come up the stairs, I stared at the city. It was mostly dark, with only a few lights flickering. It wasn't remotely the same city I'd met last August. Still, I loved her. One day she would be filled with life, teeming with Craic again. Danny was out there in the streets somewhere. Soon I would go looking for her, but not to kill her. We'd fight back to back. Sisters and all, I think Alina would understand. The good guys and bad guys aren't as easy to tell apart as I used to think they were. You can't look at someone with your eyes and take their measure. You have to look with the heart. The end. For now.
Please continue listening to hear JZB from Shadow Song. To order Shadow Song, the soundtrack for Karen Marie Monning's book Shadow Fever, containing more music and original exclusive material from Karen Marie Monning, visit www.karenmonning.com.
What is it about me that keeps you awake at night? Is it that I might be out there or that I might not? In your darkest fantasy, hidden from the world, in a part of you nothing else can ever fill. I'm there, stripped of all judgment. I demand no apology for anything you desire. I can be whatever you need, but leave yourself behind. You will become whatever I want. The only chains in here are the ones you bring. I am your dirty dreams. I am the nature of your beast. I am. You leave the lights out down here. Is it that you don't want me to find my way out? As long as you stay down here, I won't ever leave. I am your dirty dreams. I am the nature of your beast. You can be my feast. Dirty dreams. I am the nature of your beast.
We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of Shadow Fever by Karen Marie Monning. Copyright 2011 by Karen Marie Monning, LLC. Performed by Natalie Ross and Phil Giganti. Directed by Christopher Kessel. Performance copyright 2010 Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. This audiobook contains selections from the CD Shadow Song, written, arranged, and performed by Neil Dover. Copyright 2011 McHalo Records. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancedio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.